On this episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast, I talk with Kurt Willems about echoing hope. Well, hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast. My name is Dan Jackson, and I'm the host here of this podcast where we talk about what it means to pursue a life of ordinary faith in God's extraordinary grace. And as always, I'm just so glad that you're here with me, that you take this journey with me and listening in on these conversations that we get to have together about what it means, again, just to take everything that we have and turn it over to the Lord and see what He's able to do in incredible ways, even just through our ordinary faithfulness. And so today we're going to continue doing the same thing that we always get to do. And I've got a great conversation with a guest, Pastor Kurt Willems. Kurt recently released a book called Echoing Hope. And it's a book that really dives into looking at our humanity, what it means to be fully human, and what it means to also echo the hope that we have because of the resurrection in Jesus Christ. And so this conversation, we're going to talk a lot about pain and suffering. We're going to talk about humanity and what it means to feel those things deeply, but ultimately what it means to live in light of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so this is going to be a cool conversation that we kind of twist and turn all over the place, but I think you're going to find something on it to connect to it, because the idea of pain and difficulty and suffering, we all connect to that. We all relate to it because we all have challenges and hard moments in our lives. And so I think what you hear from Kurt today is going to really give you something to hold on to and give you a new perspective, hopefully, on how to hold those things and how to live in light of the resurrection. So I can't wait for you to hear this conversation with Kurt Willems. Well, I'm joined today by Kurt Willems. Kurt, thank you so much for being a guest with us today on the Ordinary Faith Podcast.
Hey, I'm honestly honored, and it's I've been doing a lot of these conversations lately, and you know, I'm a podcaster too, so I'm used to being on the other end of the mic, so it's kind of fun to sit in this spot and get to meet so many people in the last couple of months. So glad to be with you, Dan. This
is awesome. Man, great. So you don't have to think about the questions; you just get to have the conversation this time around.
Yeah,
this end of the mic.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you would go ahead and just introduce yourself, tell our listeners just a little bit about who you are, kind of your family, and where you're coming from.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks for the opportunity. You know, we live in Seattle, Washington, and we've been here for end of summer will be 8 years. We moved here to plant a church with a denomination called the Brethren in Christ. And so we've been doing it for a while out here, originally from Central California, kind of near Fresno, which some people have heard of. And I often say Fresno is the reason people go to California, but that's not true.
I've never heard of anyone vacationing in Fresno.
No, nor would I. Yeah. But it is, you know, it's our roots, and we love the people there. And, we felt this nudge to move up here. And, you know, at the time we had a 3-month-old baby. We were 29 and a half, 3-month-old baby and a couple dogs and a friend who played the guitar. And we just moved out here.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was, it's been a wild 7.5 years or so. Now, you know, we've been here long enough. We've got established rhythms. My wife is a special education teacher, so she does that. And my oldest now is a second grader, so a lot has changed. And then we have a 2-year-old who just is a lot of fun. So mostly the last year we've been at home. Like a lot of people.
So I talk a little bit about that, because that's one of the things, you know, on this podcast, we talk about what it means to listen in ordinary faith. Like, how do you respond to what God's doing in any given moment? Mm. Obviously, moving to a new state, planting a church, that's not one of those small decisions. The way you phrased it a moment ago is kind of this nudge from God that you felt like that was doing. How did you process through that? What was that like? Like, were you in ministry before that and had always thought about planting a church, or kind of, I'd just be curious for our listeners to hear a little bit more about that step of faith for you and for your family.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, yeah, I've been in ministry pretty much my whole post-high school life, right?
Okay.
So felt called to ministry as a 16-year-old after, you know, a season of being a little shady, I guess you could say, and had a pretty big turnaround at the end of my sophomore year of high school. And by the end of summer, had a dynamic experience with God that it was clear ministry was my future. Who knew that it would unfold how it does, it, you know, with a lot of highs and a lot of lows. But we were in youth ministry for quite a while and then got an opportunity to do ministry in a context that was ready to plant a multi-site congregation. So they were outgrowing their space, wanted to have a vision for more campuses. And so we joined up with them, and about a year or so into it, after, you know, a lot of training and planning and strategy, team gathering, venue securing, all the things you might imagine us doing, we realized that the plan was good, but the timing was bad. And essentially that led to a conversation with my team, also my wife, like, what are we doing? Like, what's going
on? Yeah.
As timing would have it, that conversation with my, you know, the people I was accountable to at the church was a day or two before a spiritual retreat with many others who were doing various forms of church planting in our denomination and a little beyond. And we, you know, I had a powerful experience at this retreat and had a sense that what we had been learning, what we've been doing was not wasted. That there was something to gather up here. And instead of planting a campus for another church, that maybe God was inviting me to plant a whole new thing. And so, so that was a journey though. I mean, we didn't just like, oh, super, let's move 1,000 miles away. You know, like there's a lot of emotion that goes into that. At that time, we didn't have kids yet. We knew we wanted to have at least our first kid where normalcy and safety were kind of there. So we didn't want to move away and have our first kid. And so I had some seminary to finish anyway at that point. So we finished some schooling. I taught in a vocational college for a year. And finally we felt like, you know what? It's time. It's time. And things started to come together. It wasn't easy. And I'll tell you what, the process up here has been hugely challenging. Some of the little snippets of that come out in my book, but it has not been an easy go. And probably about midway through the journey, a little before midway, about 2 or 3 years into the journey, it was really bad, really hard. But we've come out the other side as, you know, more deeply formed people, as a husband and wife and as followers of Jesus. And so, it's a big move. And yet, really, it's a bunch of tiny little things that make a big move, you know? So I would say, as much as it sounds like a big thing, it's honestly a whole lot of ordinary and a whole lot of the stress and the joys that come with it.
Yeah, man, that's great. And it's, you know, church planning is not for the faint of heart by any means.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and as you're mentioning kind of that 2 or 3 year mark, I think that is where a lot of times that's where the rubber hits the road for real in church plants. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that don't make it past that mark. And so the fact that you guys are still plugging away here almost 8 years later is a testament, not just to your faithfulness and pursuit of that, but also God's hand and kind of just, being good to y'all on that. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah. So
you mentioned your book here a moment ago and it's obviously a timely conversation that you're bringing to light here in your new book, Echoing Hope. It's really all about pain. It's about suffering, but more than that, it's about how through all of that, we still get to echo hope into the world around us and how we actually are carriers of that hope that comes through Jesus Christ. And so, I mean, this is a time when everybody who's going to potentially read that book or listen to this conversation knows very well pain, knows difficulty. Mm-hmm. So just talk to us about the why behind the book and like the timing of it. Is this something that's been there for you for a while and just happened to be on the tail end of a global pandemic, or was, you know, just kind of why this book, why right now, why this conversation?
Yeah. You know, it's really, curious. So I started writing, well, there's bits and pieces of this thing that I've been working on creatively for like 3 or 4 years, right? So I have one story in there that I think I say my daughter's 4.5 years old. Well, she's turning 8 next month. So it gives you a little context, right?
Yeah,
for the journey. But for the most part, this is, I mean, I got my contract well before the pandemic. I wrote my first draft leading up towards the pandemic, but you know, I turned in my first draft in March, I think it was, of 2020. Mm. So by then we were just like, what's going on? Like, we didn't know like that this was going to be a big deal. Yeah. And so, of course the first draft of a book, if it's, got people around it, hopefully it's not the last, one. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the timing was curious. I think God was guiding something. But it wasn't necessarily like I need to write a pandemic book.
Right.
Now there's glimpses now of the pandemic. I make some passing references to distancing and, you know, I kind of name it a few times, but those were afterthought references. They weren't they didn't trigger this like desire to write this book. For me, I started with the premise that I wanted to explore the humanity of Jesus. Hmm. That was it. Actually, I didn't even know it was going to be deeply about pain right away. And my first go at this book was just about, okay, so if God became human to show us the best way to be human, then being human like Jesus is good. Like being human is a good thing, not a bad thing, which that's a narrative that a lot of Christians have to wrestle with. Like when they hear that at first, they're like, is this a new age or is this Christianity? And I'm like, no, this is Christianity 101, man. This is like Garden of Eden stuff. This is the Jesus is the second Adam stuff. And so there's that bit of it. And so I was exploring in that first version of this book, like, what does it mean to be human like Jesus is human? And it's very inspiration driven. Sure, pain was built in there, but it wasn't like the focal point. Got some feedback on that first idea, and really everyone was like, great content, but what's really like the touch point for people? Hmm. And that feedback was like, oh, that's a bummer. I really like my book, you know? And long story short, it took a few weeks, a few conversations, a few just prayerful moments. And all of a sudden it was pain that came out as why Jesus's humanity is so compelling. Jesus doesn't avoid or escape pain. Jesus walks through it. Hmm. And if Jesus is the model for what it looks like to be fully alive and fully human for us, then it says something about pain if Jesus doesn't walk away from it. You know, of course he was tempted in a sense, like in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's like, hey, I don't want to do this, but I will. You know, and he does, obviously. Yeah. So that's really how this started to come together. And when I realized pain, it hit me because my story, like anyone's story, has a lot of pain in it. Hmm. And my pain is unique to me. You know, I grew up in an abusive house and had some real challenges early on in life. And it kind of just all came together around, wait a second, there's something here. Like, I have to share my story. Like, if I'm going to talk about being human like Jesus who walks through suffering, it means that I might have to share some of my own suffering. And do I want to do that? Hmm. And then I gave it a go, and both creatively and spiritually, it just was like, I've got to step into this. And so that's how it was born. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think that is about the sharing of our pain that, like you said, it became the compelling thing, and it became the point when you started to do that, when you leaned into those reflections and processing through that. And man, Kurt, just to say too, I mean, I've been reading through the book and haven't quite finished it yet, but I appreciate the vulnerability, because you could do what you did with the first draft and just write the book with the knowledge, but to say, hey, here's some stories, here's some incidents that are really visceral to you, of the pain, is there's a connection point from me to you and from anybody who's going to read and hear your story, but there's also something healing in that. And there's something that moves us forward. And I think you maybe touch on that with Jesus too. Like, oddly, when this book came across my desk, our church, we were just preaching through, really just the humanity of Jesus. And so it was really, really fitting for us. And one of the phrases that we kind of latched onto with Jesus was that before he fixed it, he felt it. It's just kind of that empathy. And so what do you think that is about shared pain? Even though your story is different than my story, your pain is different. What is it about shared pain that actually draws us closer to each other and even closer to who God is revealed in Christ?
Wow. Yeah. There's so much there because, you know, the reason I think the humanity of Jesus, like I said a minute ago, is so compelling is because Jesus experienced the kind of pain we experience. Now, we're not going to be executed by the Roman Empire, but, you know, Jesus felt pain, sorrow, laughter. Like, he felt all of the spectrum of human experience. And so what that means initially is I can relate to Jesus because Jesus relates to me, you know, but it goes a step further because a lot of us, when we're in the middle of pain, are tempted to feel like we're alone. We're tempted to feel like isolation, shame, don't want to talk about this stuff. And I think when we realize that other people really have their own stories of pain and when those things are shared and not, I think you probably caught this. I try not to overshare. I just share.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot more I could have said and I did not.
Yeah.
You know, and my point to all of that is, there's this healthy space where we move from feeling alone and isolated because of our brokenness to my pain actually joins me up in solidarity with everyone else around me. And because everyone has pain in their lives, everyone has things that aren't going well. And so you connect that then with Jesus, who dies and resurrects to hold all of the pain of all of human history on himself. Like he literally like is the kind of God who empathizes with every ounce of brokenness in the world. And if that's true, joining Jesus in his own holding of suffering not only gives his like not only gives me a way to experience his empathy towards me, but it then pushes me to notice that Jesus holds the pain of my neighbor too. Jesus holds the pain of my grandmother, you know, whoever it might be, and it invites me to move beyond myself. I think stories have the power to remind us of that. And so for me, these stories are designed to open us up to the fact that we're not alone in the struggles we face. And so that was intentional. You know, I could have just thrown them in there to make people cry, but that really would be a waste of a story because stories are much more significant than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just love that thought that the full humanness of God who was in Christ, who emptied himself and became a man, experienced all these things. And so for us, and this is kind of the point that you're making about becoming fully human, is that for us then becoming aware of these emotions, joy, pain, laughter, hunger, all these things are what it means to be human. And we don't have to push that stuff away necessarily, that somehow in the feeling of that, and somehow even more so in the shared feeling, as Jesus wept, as Jesus took on pain, there's actually something more human about that. And there's something unifying in that. And there's something even more Christ-like in that. And so many times I think we want to push past the pain. We want to ignore things. We want to do whatever we can to escape it. And yet there's something about sitting in it. And there's something about recognizing that it's there. I mean, you talk about, like, you even talk about lament in the book. Like, so what does that mean? Like, how do we do this? How do we look at our life, whatever our experience, some of us have lost loved ones to COVID in the last year. Some of us have lost jobs, are struggling financially. I mean, I'm a pastor, so I'm constantly hearing it, just as you are, Kurt, just the amount of pain people are suffering. How do we start to learn to do this well for, you know, for the mom right now who's listening to this, for the dad who's driving to work and their marriage isn't good, or somebody just got sick? Like, how do we start to understand and live in this pain in a way that actually draws us closer to God and to each other?
Wow. You know, I think a lot of us have in mind that God is supposed to be like a cosmic fixer.
Yeah.
You know, there's chaos in our lives. And if you know what a fixer does, right, it's kind of a shady, almost mob position.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. you know, clean up the
Yeah, I've seen Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. You know, someone who cleans up the press and takes care of the mess, you know. Yeah. Wow, I rhymed. That was not on purpose. But, you know, and so when we have problems, it's like, God, just fix all of this. Like, make this better. And that doesn't always happen. And for some people, that makes them doubt their faith. And, you know, and we could talk about why that doesn't always happen. I don't know that I'm going to do that in this moment. But I'm thinking about, you know, the examples you just gave of a mom or a dad. And, you know, one of the things that I am drawn towards about Jesus is, yeah, he won't always fix things in the way that we want them fixed. But he will always offer this profound empathy. I mean, and that to me is like step one. Like, can we understand that at the foundational level, when we're walking through something that is hard, or we're processing the past? You know, a lot of my stuff is about processing my past. You know, when you're writing a book, you're not always talking about pain in real time because it's reflective.
Right.
Although chapter 14 has some like immediate pain. you know, when you get there, that's but the point being this, that as people are holding their pain in real life, if we can start by saying, Jesus, I know that you get it. I want to experience just your solidarity with me in this. And I need to know that I can be courageous through it. Can you help me? Can you give me the resources to be more like you when you suffer? You know, rather than take the suffering away, although every once in a while miracles are possible and that happens, but that's rare. What's more likely is that we're going to get to walk the road through something that's no good and come out the other side with Jesus in a different way. And so I think that's one of the things that really matters. And so you connect that to lament, and lament is this biblical opportunity that a lot of people forget, that really when we're suffering, God says, lay it on me. Tell me, you know, use crude language if you have to, but tell me what's going on. And we see this in the Psalms so many times. You know, the world is terrible. Everyone's hurting me. Everyone's making my life awful, God. And where are you? Do you even care? I think we need to name those feelings. Those are real feelings.
Yeah.
And by the end of these Psalms, what you end up with most of the time is, but I'm going to trust you.
Yeah.
I'm going to know that you are God. I'm going to remember the good things you already have done and trust that you are seeking my good in this. You are faithful. You know, and so that's kind of like the Psalm of Lament format. And I think sometimes we need to be able to be in the car. You know, we've dropped off our kid at soccer practice and we need to run to the store and make sure that we bought groceries for the night's meal, whatever it is. Well, in that 15-minute commute between those two points, what does it look like for you to say, I'm exhausted, God. I'm broken right now. And just to give God all of those real emotions rather than feeling like we have to hold on to them and hide them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so much there to unpack. And I don't know that we have even the time to do that, but just the reminder that it's okay to feel that stuff. And I know, like, my tendency, especially with my wife, when she's sharing frustrations about work or whatever, like my inclination is to offer, well, here's a leadership principle that you can apply. Uh-huh. It's like, and I'm learning, after 20 years of marriage to sometimes just shut up and let her feel the frustration, and sometimes to ask the question, hey, what do you think is behind that? Like, what's the feeling behind the feeling there? And the more I can actually do that is more helpful than trying to like diagnose the problem with her coworker, the problem, you know, and give her the solution. And I think so much of what I see, and certainly I'm guilty of myself in our culture in particular, is this avoidance where when things get really hard, we want the way out without first recognizing that, without stopping to realize that God's actually already present with us in those moments. And we do ourselves a disservice when we refuse to lament, when we refuse to let ourselves feel. In fact, I remember not quite a year ago. It was probably about April or May. So we had maybe a month into the pandemic, and it was when everybody really started feeling it. Like at first, my recollection of it was at first, at least in my area in Kentucky, the rural areas here, we weren't seeing initially the massive cases and the deaths. And so there was this sense in our area, in our part of the country, like, well, we just need to get back to where everything needs to be normal. Mm-hmm. And I had this deep sense in my spirit that, man, there's something here that we need to feel before we start. Mm-hmm. Like, even in the church, we kept using this language, like, we can't wait to see a Sunday. We can't wait to see a Sunday, as if what's happening right now in the present was not meaningful, and that there's something in the pain, something in the loss. And I had this deep sense that as almost like as a nation, certainly as a church, global church, we needed to feel something and understand the grief of the moment. And I think we're just not good at that. Does that seem right to you? Like, we're just not good. Even as Christians, we're not good at this.
We are pain avoiding as a culture.
Yeah.
And as the church, especially, I don't want to over racialize this, but the white American church in particular, we have stories of suffering in our background. You know, my family was persecuted, Mennonite communities that fled to the United States. So we have stories in our background of like pain and suffering. But what I found in my own Mennonite heritage is as we went from a suffering community to a flourishing, you know, our farms did really well and things started to go well. People were stable financially for the first generation post-World War II-ish, those stories became sort of novelties, and they were good stories to remember. But really our regular experience of life was, you want to go out to a restaurant and enjoy, splurge a little? Like it just became like the normal middle class or better life for a lot of people in my tradition. And this is true of a lot of other traditions. My point is this, that as that happens, as we're further distanced from systematic pain, pain that really harms our whole communities, we start to assume, and this isn't all bad, but we start to assume that life is by default low in regards to pain and suffering. And so when pain and suffering show up, they are the horrible intrusions in our lives, rather than what it is for most of the world, where pain and suffering is fairly normative, and yet we discover joy as we hold these things, So I think as a culture, we tend to be pain avoidant. And when we do that, what happens? Well, we lock ourselves off from this real human experience that honestly, biblical Christianity just doesn't do. Read Paul, read the stories of Paul and Silas in jail. I mean, this is normal for New Testament Christianity. We suffer and yet we rejoice.
Yeah.
For Americans that follow Jesus, often it's kind of the opposite. It's we rejoice. Oh, why are we suffering? And I think that shock that comes from some level of affluence, whether or not everyone listening to this is like, yeah, I've got a nice house, I've got all this stuff. We have a level of affluence if we have the ability to listen to a podcast. Let's just kind of name that. So there's just a different foundation. And what that does, unfortunately, is I think it harms us, because I think the Bible is ahead of psychology, like it often is. The Bible is like, you've got to allow your whole being to feel what is real. And if pain and suffering right now are real, rather than being pain avoidant, and I'm not saying don't take your medication for your physical ailments, but like when it comes to the emotional stuff, we have to be able to feel it, hold it, and then discover that with God, we can actually process it, because on the other side of suffering and pain and emotion, actually those things get healthily integrated into our whole person, according to psychology. And my book doesn't really go into this, but this is just my own experience.
Right.
And I'm like, you mean Jesus is really good at being a therapist? Well, yeah. Like, why wouldn't he be, I think we are by nature pain avoidant. And Jesus says, follow me and let me show you how avoiding pain isn't the best way to be human.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this isn't like the extreme opposite. Go looking for pain. Jesus would never want you to look for pain. Jesus doesn't even want you to have pain. But because the world is painful, Jesus says, let's see what we can redeem even from this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I talk to anybody who goes to on a short-term mission trip to Guatemala or Africa, mm-hmm. and they are Haiti, they're going to be amazed. They'll come back and say, I can't believe they had nothing and they're so happy. They're filled with so much joy. And it's like, man, it's like, we're the ones missing something because we have so much. We were talking, our pastor, our leadership team was talking recently with just a group of some black pastors and leaders mm-hmm. in our community. And one of the things that one of these guys said was just so profound and touches on what you just said. You know, he's talking about, you know, for the most part, again, the white evangelical Christian church, he said, I can tell a lot of about what your theology is based on how you talk about your pain and suffering, because you say, oh, the stock market's doing well, Jesus must be coming back soon, or like, we're in a global pandemic, we're having to isolate and stay in my really nice house for a few months, that must mean the end is coming and God's going to whisk me away. Like, and he just was sort of just poking a little fun at the fact that, man, you're just not good at understanding pain. Talk to people whose lives are lived in some kind of suffering, and they're not trying to escape. They're not trying to wait for some kind of rapture where they're removed from all the pain. They've learned to hold it. They've learned how to bear up with one another in that. And as a result, their joy and their worship is a lot of the times so much more powerful and visceral than what we might experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, the tendency in some pockets of evangelicalism to focus on the end be here because these things are happening and it's so hard. I think it's problematic on all kinds of levels. I'm not going to get into eschatology, the study of the end or whatever. But if, you know, and I personally believe that when Jesus comes back, maybe I am a little, when Jesus comes back, that's a one and done, that Jesus comes back to heal, purge, bring heaven to earth, that new creation is this creation reborn, that we'll have resurrected bodies, all of that, that's all one and done. So the idea of a rapture and some of that, that's not really my theology personally. But let's pretend that I did hold to a rapture theology. It sounds like what this dear brother is saying is like, do you really think this version of suffering and pain is a thing that's going to like trigger the end times? Like the end time, like imagine if that were true, well then Paul and Silas would have been the only generation of Christians because, you know, that was way worse. I mean, by the time you get to the 90s of the first century, I mean, Domitian is having these like fun, different creative ways to kill and make Christians suffer. And and here we are wondering if staying at home in our, you know, two-story house with a pool is going to make us, you know, die or something.
Yeah.
So, again, it's silly. And this isn't to poke fun at people because I think pain is pain.
Yeah.
You know, like that was this is hard. No matter where we are and what we're experiencing, pain is pain. And I never want to minimize pain in any form. But I also think there's something healthy about putting pain into perspective so that we can actually say, what is really pain, and allow our bodies and souls to feel its full weight with the proper supports in place.
Yeah.
A community of people that are supporting us, the love of Jesus. You know, I don't think anyone should do that in isolation.
Yeah.
But again, feeling pain in isolation is a very American thing and not a very biblical thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've tracked on a whole bunch of different rabbit trails that I don't know either of us planned on going down necessarily, but like,
I love it.
So come back, let's come back to this. So we've talked a lot about just pain and lament and what it means to just be human in that, mm-hmm, but come back to the title of your book, Echoing Hope. Pain and hope go hand in hand. So what does it mean? Just not that you have to tie a bow on this by any means, but like, what's your hope for us, for me as an individual Christian follower of Jesus, but for even bigger than that, for us as the church, like, what does this look like? What does this mean for us to echo hope?
Yeah. So the title comes out of this idea that Jesus, raises from the dead Yeah. The tomb is empty and no one knows what happened to his body, you know? And so you can imagine on the one hand, this idea that he is not here, like he's missing.
Yeah.
This could be really horrible news. And so the echoes you're hearing it coming out of that tomb, you know, it's like a cave structure, are these echoes of your worst nightmare. And yet what we actually know is that in the midst of those painful questions, Jesus had actually resurrected. And so these echoes actually are echoes of hope. The tomb is empty, and this is good news. And, you know, one of the things that I find fascinating about the word hope often is such a, it's a word we use and forget that hope is a word needed because of suffering. So hope doesn't exist in the new creation. There's nothing to hope for when Jesus is here and we are in, you know, our bodies are incorruptible like Jesus's. There's no sin and suffering. So hope is not a permanent experience. It is a temporary experience that was launched by the resurrection and will be like totally like consummated or totally realized at the end. And so we live in between the times, as they say. And so what does hope mean right now? Well, hope means that we hold our pain in a different way, that with the power and presence of the Holy Spirit, who the Bible over and over says, like, this is the down payment. This is the deposit of that future reality with God. Right. So we can experience right now, because of the presence of the Spirit, the fulfillment that comes from having this hope that the world as it is isn't the world as it will be. Our lives as they are aren't our lives as they're going to be. And so when we suffer, we're not left to, well, this is as good as it's ever going to be. My life is just awful.
Yeah.
But rather, we have the resources of a personal God who is a person to walk with us through these various struggles so that we can approach a pain-filled world differently and become, as we you kind of alluded to earlier, echoes of hope. In other words, our vocation is to not just be healed because life is hard, but to be healers, to be people who step into the world and say, I know that my pain is not what God wants for me, but that God is so good that God will take that pain, repurpose whatever is possible to salvage, make me stronger, make me more courageous, make me better equipped to then be available to a world that needs more people who look like Jesus. And so echoing hope is all about saying there is a hope that echoes from an empty grave, and we can replicate that hope here, now, and, well, hopefully until the day that Jesus comes back to finally tie a bow on it, as he said a minute ago.
Yeah. So. Oh, man, I love that. And man, I know we've got listeners who are, like I said earlier, we've got listeners who are going through ugly divorces. We've got listeners who are really struggling at jobs that are difficult or hard.
Yeah,
who have lost jobs, have lost loved ones just recently, and just anything in between, who are facing difficult diagnoses. Yeah. So this idea of pain is common to all of us, and and that's just such what you just said about hope and about who Jesus is and how we carry that is so encouraging. And I know that folks listening to this are going to be really really gripped by that. And so, just listeners, I would encourage you, just if you're feeling any twinge towards just some hope in this conversation, go ahead and grab a copy of Kurt's book, Echoing Hope. It's available now. It just came out this week, right? Just here. Yeah. So it's available now. We'll link to that so everybody can have it. And man, Kurt, congratulations on the book. Thanks for writing it. Thanks for your vulnerability. One question before we close that I always try to end with, because again, ordinary faith, how are you experiencing God in ordinary moments? And so I always like to ask people, what's good? Like what's something right now where you're finding joy or delight, whether it's something you did with your kids, a song you heard on the radio, something you watched on Netflix, but what's good right now in your life, Kurt?
What's good?
Oh man, it is my kids and my wife, man. this is a fun week. My wife and I celebrated 14 years of marriage the day after the book came out. So Wednesday, St. Patrick's
week.
Day.
Yeah.
Huge week. So my 2-year-old is finally starting to put together like real sentences. and has real, just her personality that we've always seen. It's like, yeah, you are like this funny little child. Like, we've always thought she was really funny and sweet. And man, just being with her and her big sister, like just seeing those girls play together and being able to be part of that and just laughing and trying to, you know, in a world like this where there's so much pain that wants to pull us away from the moment so we can plan a better future. Man, I've been growing, and this is my growing edge, to just say, I want to be present to this moment and let those other future concerns, my job tomorrow, let those be tomorrow. And I think Jesus was right on, apparently, when he said, let tomorrow be tomorrow, because today, here's what you have in front of you. And I think, wow. So it's utterly, utterly my family right now that just lights my fire.
That's awesome. That is such a fun age when they start actually stringing together words and sentences.
Oh,
that's great.
It's so I could go on and on and on about this journey with these two girls, man. Yeah. It's so fun.
That's awesome. Well, Kurt, thanks so much for the time. Thanks again for the book. Thanks for what you're offering the church and your church, but also all of us who are able to kind of take part in this with you. So appreciate your time today.
Hey, what a gift. Thank you. Keep going. I know this is an important ministry, and your church ministry and just life is all... I'm sure just really important in a time like this. So thank you so much.
Well, I told you, man, just another great conversation. I'm thankful for Kurt and this message. I mean, it's something that I think all of us as followers of Jesus are going to continue to wrestle with probably for our whole lives, because the reality is that pain and suffering and difficulty will never end for us. And one of the things that Kurt said towards the end of this conversation was just that we can't have hope without pain. The reason we have hope is that pain is present. And so whatever you are going through right now, I know we're still kind of on the tail end, hopefully the tail end of this coronavirus pandemic. And man, I had Easter lunch this week with a family, some dear friends, and you know, they're struggling. They've got in-laws and parents who are on ventilators still because of the coronavirus, because of COVID. And, you know, just, I know there's so many people dealing with difficulty in so many different ways. And so this message of echoing hope, of learning to embrace, not embrace in a loving sense, but to hold on to and fully experience what it means to be human, because Jesus did the same thing. And then to find the hope that we have in the middle of all that, because again, Jesus did the same thing. As I mentioned earlier, before Jesus fixed it, he felt it. And so that's just a great reminder for us today. I hope this conversation, I hope Kurt and what he had to share was encouraging to you. I'd encourage you to go check Kurt out. I'll have his social profiles linked on the episode webpage here in the show notes, and as well as his book, Echoing Hope, that'll be linked on the show notes as well. So please go check Kurt out, check his new book out, because man, this is something that all of us are going to relate to. And of course, I would love if you would just take a few moments to rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And of course, to go share it if this conversation was encouraging to you or challenging to you in the good kind of way. Again, go ahead and just send it to a friend. Send it to somebody who you know is struggling with some different things, because I think there's something we can all take away from what Kurt had to share today. So again, I just appreciate you being here. It's my joy and my privilege to be able to have these conversations and to share them with you. So thanks for being here. Until next time, friends, remember, all it takes to bring heaven to earth is ordinary faith in extraordinary grace.